Welcome to the Powered by Transova podcast, where Transova team members and industry experts will cover how our reproductive toolbox of embryo transfer, in vitro fertilization, sorted semen, and cloning technologies can multiply the success within your livestock breeding program. Throughout our series, we will also cover a wide array of topics such as frequently asked questions, management and care advice, as well as client and location highlights.
Welcome to another episode of the Powered by Transova podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about similar services as we've used to, but just kind of a different end user. We're going to be targeting our small ruminant services and talk to our experts in that area. We have with us today, Catherine and Austin. Thank you both for joining us. Why don't we go ahead and get started and have you give us a little introduction on yourselves. Catherine, if you want to start and kind of give us some background on who you are and what your position is within Transova.
Yeah, so my name is Catherine Taylor. I am the small ruminant professional services veterinarian. So I graduated from Iowa State in 2022. And so coming to Transova, I started in April of 2023. I've always grown up raising and showing sheep and goats and have had a really big passion for both our small ruminant species and repro. So I was very excited when I joined the Transova team to kind of combine those passions and really fulfill my career serving our clients to help meet their success within small ruminant repro work.
And I am Austin. I am a herdsman here at Transova Genetics. I care for about 250 sheep and goat recips that are a part of our cloning program and also donors that are housed here. I have been a part of Transova since 2018, I believe. And then I also worked part-time before that, calving cows and doing some daily care of livestock. Part of my job is definitely taking calls from clients and kind of being a CSR or a client service provider in a way. Just comes with the territory when you're taking care of people's animals. And that's part of the job I really love, is reaching out to progressive livestock folks that want to use our services. So.
Great. Well, thank you both for joining us. This has been a highly asked for topic. We get tons of inquiries from the website about small ruminant services. So I'm glad that it's finally worked out for us to get you both on here and chat about it, because I don't know about Sarah, but I know nothing about sheep and goats. Okay, so you're going to have to educate us on this stuff. So Catherine, why don't you go ahead and kind of talk about what services that we Transova offers for the small ruminant clients, sheep and goats.
Yeah, so we offer like three primary services for our small ruminant clients. The first one being laparoscopic AI. Another option would be flushing, whether it's surgical flushing or non-surgical flushing. And then finally, we have our laparoscopic OPU program, which is part of our IVF system. So kind of how those differ, especially from the cattle world, sheep are very hard to transcervically AI. So a laparoscopic AI allows us to use laparoscopic ports that allow us to get that semen directly in the uterus near the time of ovulation. So it's a really good opportunity, especially if you have semen that's maybe not of the greatest quality. It gets it really close to those, to the point of where ovulation will occur and get a better success rate on the frozen side of things. Flushing, kind of with that, we usually do surgical flushing. That's our primary function in small ruminants. So it's a small incision that's on midline, and we exteriorize that whole uterus. And then we do a unilateral flush where we put fluid in at the tip of the horns and it comes out near the cervix through our Foley catheter. And then we have our lab companions that help in search, look for embryos. And then finally, our most advanced procedure that we offer is the laparoscopic OPUs for IVF. So that's, again, it's a surgical procedure slightly, but it's still laparoscopic, where we just have three small little incisions where I put my laparoscopic ports in. And I'm able to visualize those ovaries and then aspirate those individual follicles off the ovaries. And then those are grown for about 24 hours in maturation media and incubators before they're fertilized within our lab. This is a great opportunity for like really old semen, or semen that maybe wouldn't work super great for flushing, that's maybe has a slower motility, or just a rare frozen semen in general. It's awesome because we can use one unit of semen across multiple does. So it gives that opportunity to spread our genetics across multiple donors. And then after those oocytes are fertilized, they sit in the incubators in our lab till about day 6 when they're transferred.
And then another service that I probably work the most closely with would be a part of our advanced technologies program would be our small ruminant cloning. That is a very exciting and challenging technology that we get the umbrella to be a part of here at Transova Genetics. A lot of my daily job is to try and procure oocytes for that program that will then go to the cloning lab. In the cloning lab, they will do all the things and enable to make that cloned embryo that will go into our recips housed here at Transova. And then that program is a little different in that those embryos go into our recips. They're housed, gestated, and lambed or kitted here in Sioux Center. And then those cloned animals go home at usually about 60 days of age on a recipient that they were born off of.
Perfect. So, so very similar to the cattle as far as the process goes. Catherine, I think maybe you breezed over this because we talk about this all the time. You'll put the embryos in too, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So, with our flushing program and our IVF program, all of those embryos can put in fresh, or we have the option to freeze. And then if you want to come back after several months or years, if you want to put those embryos in, that's an option as well.
Very good. Talking about services, a lot of times we're talking about donors and, you know, that's what we talk about here at Transova. But Austin, maybe can you tell us, you know, what services do we offer services for bucks and rams? Do we collect? What are client options in that regard?
Yeah. So right now, that's a wonderful question. One that I get asked quite frequently as well. The majority of our collecting right now, let's say a client wants to use a fresh collection to AI their does or their ewes or to AI their donors. We will collect that buck or ram on site and then process it here to use fresh. We do not currently freeze any semen here. We have other you know partners in the industry that do that and do it very successfully. So really what we do a majority of is you bring that buck to us or you have it on farm on the day that we're providing these services, we will collect that buck fresh and use those collections for our services.
Yeah, so the nice thing is we can use those collections for both LAP AIs with either our regular AIs or within our donors for flushes. And then also an opportunity too is a lot of people don't think about it, but we can use that fresh semen within our IVF system as well. So fresh cooled semen is one that we use kind of sometimes almost frequently more than frozen for a lot of our weather type animals within IVF.
And one thing I would say, and maybe we'll touch on this later, but it's a question I get asked a lot when clients are here is the dilemma of fresh or frozen and what do we find the most success with? Well, I think especially with the services we provide, we can do both and get live babies on the ground for our clients. And so especially with regards to the IVF lab, we can take frozen semen, one straw of frozen semen, like Catherine said earlier, stretch that across a number of does and hopefully multiply success across 5 donors rather than just one.
Yeah, very good point. I mean, I think that just like in the cattle world, those are great questions that we get all of the time of fresh, frozen, sexed or not, all of that. So maybe talk a little bit, Catherine, about the history of Transova adding these services because it is relatively new for us. Not super new, but in the last 5-10 years, these are things that we've added and we're still perfecting the process, right? So maybe kind of talk through how this all came to be.
Yeah. So in 2014, 2015, right in that area, that's when Missouri location really started pushing for the development of our small ruminant program. That was really their passion to start that down there. and they really felt that the services could benefit a lot of the area. So they were very fortunate in 2015. A veterinarian was hired on with the small ruminant program and was trained through that year. And then 2016, that's when they started offering a lot of the AIs, the flushes, and the embryo transfers for clients, both at a Missouri location, on farm, and I believe at the Iowa location as well. So that's really been kind of where we strived a lot and had a lot of great success, was within those flushes and embryo transfer and AI. Around that time is when IVF started to be developed for our small ruminant clients as well. There was a lot of research done and media was developed and processes were changed over the years. Till about 2018, that's when IVF and OPUs were first offered commercially to our clients. So it's a newer technology. We're still making changes, but we have had great success over the last 2 years with getting embryos to grow and develop and having successful kids on the ground with our IVF program.
Very good. Austin, do you have any idea, or would you give any outline or, you know, addition to the cloning services side of that, and you know, how long we've been offering that, or just give us a little more detail?
Absolutely. So I know that some of our cloning started happening around the same timeline. There was a prior company that I think was kind of a partner with Transova that did a lot of our initial cloning in those early years. But it's kind of been step in step throughout the entire process. Like Catherine mentioned, there's been a lot of trial and error with some of these, and we just continue to grow and develop and, you know, get a formula that works consistently for our clients. I think that's a really big thing, is that we're always trying to improve our results and get the most babies on the ground for our clients. But yeah, I think I'm trying to remember the exact date when the first one was born. And I can't think of that right now. I think they would have been born in our Missouri location, actually. And now they're all housed in Iowa. But step in step throughout the whole process, sheep and goats have been a part of our cloning program.
Very good. Thank you for that. And I know we've had some pretty exciting success stories throughout the year. And maybe we can follow up with an episode on some of those success stories from the cloning program and the small ruminant division.
Absolutely.
Austin, you talked about, you know, that formula for success and that we're always kind of tweaking that, you know, figuring out what works to multiply success for our clients. Do you think there's a certain age that a donor should be in a small ruminant, you know, to be considered for ART services?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And again, one that we get asked quite a lot. And so I think it's really important to touch on in this podcast. One of the huge benefits to IVF is progressive livestock minds can reproduce those donor females very, very quickly and at a young age. And so as soon as that animal hits puberty, we are able to put them into a program to aspirate their ovaries and fertilize and hopefully create some embryos. And unlike our conventional flushing in sheep and goats, we can run those animals a little more regularly. And so let's say you have an extremely valuable young animal. She cycles at 7 months old. We can probably do 4 or 5 procedures on that female almost before she hits a year old. Now that might be pushing it, but we can really do a lot of reproductive technologies on that female to hopefully get 4 or 5 different matings out of that female in the very first year they're born. And truthfully, I think that's something from a sales and marketing perspective that I truthfully try to push to our clients, is that, you know, if you want to be progressive and you want to shorten that generation interval and you really want to get the most babies out of the ground out of that one female, push them very quickly at a young age. Use the hottest sires in the industry on that female and make embryos really, really quickly in our IVF program. So,
yeah, I kind of want to touch base on the flip side of that. It's kind of like sometimes we get asked how old is too old, even not just how young, but how old. So it really depends on what services you're going with. Flushes, honestly, most does or even ewes have a life of only 2 to 3 flushes per year. And then by the time they're 3 or 4, they're pretty much scarred down with flushes just from having that uterus exteriorized and fluid going through it and expanding and contracting all the time. So that kind of limits her lifespan beyond that. So any adhesions or anything that really limits how long her life is as a donor within flushes. With IVF, we can, like Austin said, we can run them every 3 weeks. We can start them really young and we can go till they're pretty much out of oocytes. There is risk for adhesions there as well, but not as many adhesions that cause complications. And then even on the end side of things, if you have a donor that is starting to go downhill or is kind of getting older in age, the nice thing with our IVF program is we can offer terminal options for those ovaries. We can schedule it and have them harvest as a terminal, or if she dies unexpectedly, as long as you're near a lab and can get those ovaries out fairly quickly after death and to a lab within 3 to 4 hours, we can still aspirate those ovaries and make progeny, even though that donor is now deceased.
And one thing that I'll just mention, because, you know, I think a lot of our listeners are bovine focused and the procedures are much different. In the sheep and goat world, what we call a traditional surgical flush, there's quite a bit of trauma associated with that. And so that is the limit. And that is where IVF comes into play and is a really good option. In the early years of IVF, pretty much our bread and butter was old donors that were flushed 3, 4, 5 times. They had adhesions enough to where they could not be surgically flushed anymore, but yet that donor still had value. So how did we take these old donors that were scarred down and were really reproductively not fit anymore? And how can we still get babies off of them? Really, what we have to do is we just have to have access to their ovaries. And so we can work around trauma and scar tissue, you know, in their reproductive tract to aspirate those follicles and then hopefully get babies on the ground. And we've had a lot of success with clients to where they've got this super valuable donor that was really a pasture ornament until the IVF thing came along. And like I said, for the longest time, that was our bread and butter. And now, like I mentioned, I think on the flip side of that, there's a huge potential to use IVF to really shorten that generation interval and really capture those gains on the front end of the donor's lifespan. Again, from the perspective that it's less trauma, we're not making a huge incision in those donors. It's just a 3 little poke holes and we aspirate the ovaries. So huge benefit to IVF that people may or may not know about. So.
Yeah. And I think too, even on top of that, because IVF is a laparoscopic procedure, the really cool thing is you can, in a world that's kind of fun, you can aspirate her on Monday and Tuesday. And by Thursday, she's ready to go out for the weekend for shows Friday, Saturday. So there's not anything that's going to cause problems as far as an incision that needs to heal. So it's very cool in that opportunity that you could take animals out of your show string. They don't have to necessarily be donors that could be making progeny while they're still doing their job in the show world.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think any small ruminant clients that are listening, just go talk to your cattle friends because they're all doing the same thing. They're aspirating one day and hitting a show the next day. Or, I mean, we've done demos where we did an aspiration at the show and the next day they were in the show ring showing. So very low risk. Obviously, there's risk in anything, but it is low risk. And so I guess that was going to be my add-on question before we get to the one next on our list of the recovery time for these surgical procedures. You said, you know, they can be up and moving and showing, but what is that turnaround time in between procedures even?
Yeah. So all of these procedures require sedation or anesthesia, especially with our flushes and IVF. So a lot of those donors will have their procedure done and they'll be up ready to move within 30 minutes after procedure on their trailer to go home. Lap AIs, those are very minimally invasive, like I said before, for the AIs. And those incisions will be healed within 2 weeks at max. And then for flushes, the turnaround time is 6 to 8 weeks. Because that midline incision is a full surgery, especially on the surgical side of things, that has to heal. Those sutures really need to keep hold to make that body wall come together. Otherwise, there's risk for hernias. And then being able to have that healed so we can move to a different part within on the abdomen if we want to flush again. Now, on the flip side, there is non-surgical flushing. That is an option for our goat clients. It's something that is a little bit more invasive, less invasive than surgical flushing, but it's a little more risky as far as going through that cervix, especially when that doe's in anastrus and getting her catheter through to do flushing. But it is an opportunity as well if you don't want to have the incision on those does to be donors as well. And then finally, our IVF procedure. Those does, basically same thing like our LAP AIs, very minimally invasive. Those incisions are usually sutured, so they're good to go within a couple days. And then run time, they can run every 3 to 4 weeks.
Awesome. What would you say then is, the average results that you would get with these, with an IVF procedure? You know, with cattle, we say 30% of the oocytes collected will result in a viable embryo, which averages out to what, 6 to 7 embryos per collection. What are those numbers for sheep and goats?
Yeah. So I kind of tell clients, generally it's a 50-50 rule. Half of the oocytes that you get will get embryos, and then half of those embryos will make pregnancies. So on average, we're making about 6 embryos, and we'll see about a conception rate of about 80%. And then from there, about 50% live progeny on the ground.
And 80% conception? I'm in the wrong business. I'm going to buy me some goats.
Yeah, but we're putting twins in with those does. So honestly, the risk is there when you put twins in, are you actually going to get twins on the flip end? So IVF embryos, although it's a really cool technology and we can decrease that generation interval and everything, they don't have the viability as well as our traditional flush embryos. We're still going to make pregnancies. We're still going to have babies on the ground. That's just not the success rates that most people are used to. Our traditional flushes, you can average about 7 to 8 embryos, and those embryos will consistently see about 60% live offspring on the ground.
Yeah, and one thing I'd like to add in there, you know, I listened to a reproductive symposium here this past year, and there was a panel of reproductive folks just like us on that, and I kind of laughed at the one, but it was a good point in that part of the reproductive business is setting forth realistic expectations. I think that's so vital just for a client rapport and just developing a relationship with clients. And that person's comment was, you know, 50% preg rate plus or minus 20%, depending how lucky you are. And I just thought that was really good because, you know, we've all been there, whether you're in the cattle business, whether you're AIing, you know, gilts or sows, or if you're putting embryos into sheep and goats. And so that's something that I try to do on a daily basis is that, yes, you will hear those 80, 90% conception stories, which makes everyone want to do it. But at the end of the day, if it worked every time, everyone would be doing it. So again, progressive livestock people know that there's always some risk. But when you get the babies on the ground, if you line those things up right, it should be well worth it. So
yeah, I always tell clients, you gotta be a gambling man when it comes to small ruminant repro. You're always rolling the dice. Yes, you may have the next national champion, or you may have a dud, or you may just end up with nothing at all. So it really takes someone who's willing to put forth the resources of time and energy and money up front in order to take that gamble in order to be successful on the back end.
I always said the small ruminant world needs to make a shirt that says it just takes one, because really at the end of the day, if we're really reproducing those donors and they are the top end, you may pay your bill with one animal. Now, we always strive for more than that, as we all do, but just something to consider when you're looking at doing reproductive work for the first time.
I really like that. Managing expectations that you guys have both contributed to, because I know, you know, we're often overwhelmed with people who want to share success stories. You know, our internal team members are like, hey, Emily and Sarah, we had a dairy heifer that made, you know, X number of oocytes. Can we share on social media? And we kind of have to tamper it down, because is that setting appropriate client expectations? Is everybody going to expect that as their results? And so you're kind of speaking to Emily and I too when you're talking about that. And you know, that it's not a perfect science and that we're still dealing with biological procedures. So unfortunately, there's not a formula that always spits out a perfect number of embryos for, you know, small ruminant clients or beef or dairy clients.
Yeah, Mother Nature likes to remind us that she's still in control every once in a while.
Absolutely.
Yes, and small ruminants are one of the most trickiest ones. I mean, there's no cookie cutter way about it. I mean, every recip responds differently, and whether or not she's going to recycle or short cycle before she even gets embryos put in her, or after she puts embryos in her, or honestly, even the biggest risk is with the IVF system. I mean, or even flushing. You may have all this money into getting your donors primed, and you may look good, like, hey, she's got so many follicles on her when you go to AI for flushes, or she's got 60 oocytes, and you may come up a week later and we bust, total bust. So, I mean, it's great opportunities, but with realistic expectations, everyone gets along really well.
One thing I would also add, and you know, I could talk about this stuff all day, but there was another livestock podcast talking about Transova in the early days of the bovine IVF. And some of the expectations that clients had, you know, you weren't getting 50% preg rate in the early days of bovine IVF. And I also say that to small ruminant clients too, is that we are still in those early days with small ruminants. I mean, we're like 8 years into this. And again, every year we make huge strides in both embryo quality, embryo conception, and number of babies on the ground. But when you're in this business, it just takes years and years and years to really perfect the technology.
Yep, that's a great point, because even embryo transfer in its early days was a surgical procedure, you know, in beef and dairy. And so look how far we've come. So I can't imagine where we'll be with these technologies, you know, 5 to 10 years down the road, and what that will look like with the advancements. All right, moving on. Emily, there's another thing that Emily and I get asked all of the time, especially like on our website contact us form, is I want these services. Sign me up. Where do I find them? Can you guys kind of explain what options clients have in terms of accessing services?
Yeah, so we have two primary locations that we do offer haul-ins for. That's our Sioux Center, Iowa location, and our Chillicothe, Missouri location. So both of those offer haul-ins, and then there is the potential for donor housing as well. So working with the CSR for that, that is an option in some locations at certain times. Our other option is too, we do offer on-farm. So our small ruminant program is mobile. We're able to go on-farm, and with large enough clients or groups of clients that can come together and offer a haul-in, we can do all these services on-farm. And then also a really exciting thing for our small ruminant program is we're starting to add satellite centers across the U.S. So we're in talks with one in Indiana and one in Idaho, just to kind of start those regions. So those will be just farms that want to offer haul-ins for other clients monthly or bi-monthly to give more access across the U.S. for our clients within small ruminants.
And another thing I would say to tag along with Catherine there is that, let's say you have a clinic or a practitioner that you work with. We have a program that's called a PWP, Practicing with Practitioners. And basically what that program is that reproductive provider that you have can come learn some of these skills with regards to oocyte collections and things along those lines. And then they are the one putting embryos in for you. And the fertilizations for our IVF lab will go through Transova. So that's something that a lot of our clients who maybe don't know if they have access to someone, you know, their tried and true guy doesn't know how to do the procedure. That's something that if they can provide enough business for us with, they can learn the skill. You can keep that veterinarian or that technician doing your procedures, and the IVF work comes through our lab. So,
yeah, another thing we kind of see too is we will have clients that will haul in for us to do aspirations for IVF, and we perform the IVF. But we also have the ability to ship out incubators with those embryos. So if you have a technician or a veterinarian that you work with closely for your transfers and don't want to haul in your recips, that's always an option as well to get that incubator sent to them. And then they can perform evaluation on those embryos and transfers for you on farm if we are able to schedule something that way.
We really, I mean, we're maybe not there yet, but we really are nationwide right now. And I think right, we're in the building process of putting team members together in our satellites across the United States to really reach every nook and cranny of the country. So,
yeah, so we just finished our last trial run with basically the last region that needed to have a trial run to do small ruminant IVF within the lab. So we currently have a lab within the six regions of the United States that is able to perform small ruminant IVF. So even if you have a veterinarian in the area that can do aspirations, we have a lab that's pretty much within near most states that are having small ruminant work done. Or like I said, with donors, if they expire too early or suddenly, that really gives clients more opportunities to get progeny from those donors that may expire prematurely.
Great. Yeah. I think those are all good points. Basically, if you're interested, let us know and we'll get you hooked up somewhere that you can get your donors collected. If there's a will, there's a way. That was the moral of the story that I just heard. That's super exciting to hear the growth of this program and this team. And I'm sure there will be lots of openings. So if you're interested in small ruminant ART, be sure to check out our careers page. Our final question, well, we might have more than this, but this is the last one on our list of Austin, maybe talk a little bit more about what Transova can do to help small ruminant clients maximize our services or their success. Like, what are other things, you know, because you manage a lot of sheep and goats, donors and recips. What are certain things that you look at to be successful in this program?
I think it all starts with making a call, especially if you're new to this technology. Make a call to myself or Catherine or really even just anyone else, you know, nationwide that you know does a lot of reproductive work. Get a strong baseline for nutrition. I tell everyone to really focus on forage quality and health in those donors, and your success will come later on down the road. But it all starts with making that call. There's always someone that's been in it a little bit longer than you that maybe has some tricks to the trade. And so that's what I would recommend to anyone is give us a call, give a call to someone that you know is in the business and has had some success. Learn from them and then go from there. So one of my favorite parts about my job is being able to talk with clients, not only helping them, but also maybe learning something from their operations as well to really just continue to boost our recipient program and continue to improve our results. So,
yeah. So our success at Transova is very much the success of our clients. So although we may have protocols that are similar to start, I work closely with a lot of donors that may have had a run through Transova or have been flushed before, and really tailor our schedules and protocols for stimulation to really fit the needs of that client and their goals and what service would really best fit for them, whether it is flushing or if it's IVF, and how that would fit to meet their goals as a producer.
Donor management, and this came from Luke Fober, who manages our dairy donors here in Iowa, but it's so true and so important, and I think it's maybe not something everyone understands, but donor management and getting success is not a cookie cutter protocol. It's really not. I think we like to put everything in these cookie cutter protocols. It's like everyone gets the same. But really, when you start to dive into this business, every donor needs to be managed just a little bit differently. And let's say she may be overstimmed on the first protocol. So how can we at Transova maybe manipulate that protocol to get her the right stim next time? Same thing can be said with LAP AIs. You know, those are all based on timing. And so do your animals maybe ovulate just a tick earlier than what would be considered the normal protocol? And how do we change that the next time or based on springtime work or fall work? You know, how do we, you know, kind of make that protocol fit your animals, whether it's breed composition, age, weight, all of those sorts of things can factor into making that protocol fit your animals. So that's something that I really enjoy doing here. And I know Catherine does the same.
Very good. I know we're probably broken records on here, Emily and I, talking about how we customize our toolbox of services, but that means, you know, to specific operations, but more importantly to every donor. You know, every donor is different, isn't Emily and I have talked about that on this before. And so maybe that's our next drinking terminology to our, you know, the Transova podcast drinking game, unfortunately. But I think you guys have brought up a ton of great points. We've crammed a lot of nooks and crannies of a kind of a complicated service in a short amount of time. What else would you guys want to talk about that you know, Emily and I haven't brought up? Or are there key points that you would want to, you know, send out on to the podcast audience at this time?
I can go first there. And it's something that I think a lot about. And truthfully, I hope my passion comes through this podcast, because, you know, if I've got free time in the car, I'm probably thinking about reproducing small ruminants, to be real honest. And so we all have passion here for this technology. It is a part of kind of our everyday life to try and help these producers, you know, replicate those star animals as well as they can. And I think even if we have a bovine centered audience for this podcast, I think one thing that I think of quite often is that we're all the same as regarding our mindset. We are all very much progressive livestock minds, regardless of the species. You know, we may look different and the procedures may look different. But ultimately, we all have the same goal. And that's to create the next generation that's better than the first. And so that's what I take a lot of pride in. Another thing that I think about a lot with regards to the small ruminant program and probably looking forward, I think it fits the global scale as much as anything. Livestock are only good if they fit their environment. And so I think on a global perspective, when we start looking at importing and exporting and growing this business, that's something that really excites me with regards to the small ruminants, because there's a lot of places in the world that maybe can't support a 1,000-pound cow, but they can support a sheep or goat. And that kind of keeps me awake at night thinking about what this program can be in the future. So.
Yeah, to kind of echo what Austin said, like all of us involved in the small ruminant program, both myself and Austin and several of the people that help support us during our days with our embryologists and CSRs, we're extremely passionate about small ruminants. We've all grown up around small ruminants or been around small ruminant at Transova and really gained a passion for helping our clients. Our clients are our biggest asset when it comes to the small ruminant program, and we thank each and every one of them for working with us and growing as we grow as well. But like Austin said, with success, with our success is their success. And moving forward, there's a lot of opportunities. We are growing quickly and we're trying to get to everyone. But the nice thing is we still care about whether or not you have a single donor or if you bring us 20 donors. We will take care of each and every one of you the same and really help get to your success that you want to succeed with and grow.
Thanks again, Austin and Catherine, for joining us today and taking the time to talk about the small ruminant program. And it's evident to see or hear the passion that you both have for this industry and the small ruminant program. And thankful to have you both on the Transova team. I think we also need to give a shout out to Dwayne and Stanton and the rest of the Missouri team for all the work that they've done getting this program up and off the ground. And really, the work they've done has given us the opportunity to be here and talk about this today. So kudos to them and that team kind of driving this program forward. We'll link emails to Austin and Catherine to the show notes. If anybody has questions, feel free to reach out to them or call any Transova office employee and ask those questions. If they don't know, they know where to go, the people on this call, and get the answers that you need for them. So, appreciate the time again, and thank you all for listening to the Powered by Transova podcast.
We appreciate you tuning in to Transova. If you have any topics you'd like to hear more about, send an email to moreinformation@transova.com. Thank you.